Good afternoon. My name is Theodore Brin. I represent Sensible Housing Company, the appellant in this case. First, some general comments. The issue here in this case is the difference between a spurious lien action and a quiet title action. The appellee, Battle North, initiated this action in the Eagle County District Court as a shortcut around an already existing quiet title action, also pending in the Eagle County District Court, case number 98-CB-374. As you can tell from reading the trial court's findings, conclusions, order, and decree, the case became about whether my client, Sensible, had good title to the two parcels in question. That is not what a spurious lien case is supposed to be about. My client was being sued regarding particular documents recorded against the title. That's what should have been decided, and the earlier quiet title case should have been the forum for deciding the issues of who owned the parcel and how the title should be quiet to the parcels. The request from my client is that the trial court's order in this case should be vacated, and this proceeding at the trial level should be stayed pending resolution of the earlier filed quiet title action. The substance of the appeal focuses primarily on the finding by the trial court that a stock certificate filed in the trial court case is a spurious document, whether two quitclaim deeds were spurious documents, the application of the doctrine of judicial priority as a result of the earlier and already pending foreclosure case, and then the deference that should have been paid from not one but actually two opinions from the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court ordering that the quiet title action proceed first.
Mr. Brin, would you acknowledge that a determination of whether the quitclaim deeds are valid or not depends on a determination of whether the stock certificate is valid?
That's probably one of the issues that would have a determination of whether or not the quitclaim deeds are valid, yes.
So was it improper for Battle North to contend that the quitclaim deeds were invalid and to prove that, to put on evidence concerning the stock certificate?
Except for the doctrine of priority jurisdiction, if those issues would have been raised in that earlier case, that would have been totally proper. One of their attacks was that the quitclaim deeds were invalid because the person who signed them and the entity that signed them did not have authority to do so. And that would be part and parcel of the quiet title action, no doubt about it. This wasn't a quiet title action, though. This was an action brought under the Spurious Lien Act 38-35-201 at SEC of the Colorado Revised Statutes. There certainly is no indication in the legislative history or in any of the case law that the Spurious Lien Act was intended to or should be applied by this court or any court to documents filed in a legal proceeding in a courthouse. If that were the case, if that were the intent, the results would be just unbelievable. That would mean that in every single lawsuit that's filed in the state of Colorado, if there's a document that somebody wants to attack, a contract, a lease, an affidavit, anything, that the other party could file a spurious lien claim act saying that that document in that lawsuit is a spurious document. Not every case, but every case having anything to do with real estate, and it would create a tremendous amount of litigation. The purpose of the Spurious Lien Act is to protect title to real estate. That's in the legislative history, and for this court or the district court judge to find that a document filed in the case proceedings affects title and is subject to the remedies of the Spurious Lien Act would wreak havoc on the judicial system. It just doesn't make any sense at all. if you look at it from, you know, 30,000 feet, if you look at the big picture, it just doesn't make any sense. It's not a reasonable way to interpret this statute.
Pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Brin, but let's say hypothetically that we agree with your position on the stock certificate. That goes back to Judge Casebolt's question, which is, well, couldn't the court nonetheless consider the problems with the stock certificate when assessing the validity of documents that were filed in this case and that were placed in the chain of title?
But the, as I said, the two things that I would argue against that are the priority jurisdiction doctrine.
I understand.
Okay. But yes, of course, the court can look behind in a quiet title action to determine what is the validity of the quitclaim deeds. They can look at the documents backing it up, corporate resolutions, prior, you know, payment of consideration. They can look behind all those things. But those things are not things that are of record. They don't affect title to property, so they can't be subject, they can't be deemed as found to be a spurious lien. It just doesn't make any sense. All those supporting documents don't create spurious liens. They support an argument. And
well,
the argument
don't the quitclaim deeds support spurious lien arguments?
I don't think they do. And that's large. There's two things I would say about that. On a substantive basis, it's not possible for a quitclaim deed to be a spurious lien or a spurious document under the Act. All a quitclaim deed does, and this was stated in the brief, all a quitclaim deed does is transfer the interest that the grantor has, whatever that may be, in the property. It's not a special warranty deed, it's not a warranty deed, it's just a statement saying, I'm not sure what I have, I'm not promising you that I have anything, I'm not representing that I have anything, but if I do have anything, I'm transferring it to this person. So by the very nature of a quitclaim deed, it cannot be a spurious document.
I'm confused then, and maybe you can help me. That suggests to me that I get your argument about, well, if there's something submitted in a case, that's problematic. That makes sense to me. But it doesn't make sense to me when you're talking about documents that are repeatedly injected into the chain of title in all sorts of situations. And that can, as we know, cloud the title to property. So you got to help me a little bit with that, because the fact that quitclaim deeds are recorded all the time, as were the two here, and that they can affect the chain of title, strikes me as undercutting your argument. Please help me with why that's not so.
I'll do my best. The definition in the Spurious Lien Act says it refers to both liens and documents, so it's not just a lien that can be a spurious lien, even though that's the title of the statute. It also refers to documents. But it says the document must be forged or groundless, contains a material misstatement or false claim, or is otherwise patently invalid. This quitclaim deed, there is no evidence that it was forged. It can, a quitclaim deed by its nature cannot be groundless. A quitclaim deed just says, I'm giving you what I have, whatever that is, I'm not promising you anything.
So as a matter of law, would, let me posit an example. Somebody in my chain of title 30 years ago, who's still around but who transferred the property 20, 30 years ago, and then we've had a couple of intervening people. If that person issues a quitclaim deed saying, purporting to quitclaim their interest in my property, and then it gets recorded, you're saying as a matter of law, that quitclaim deed cannot constitute a spurious document?
The argument I make is that it cannot, because all it is a statement of I'm transferring what I own. The person in your circumstance does not say that they are, that they do own it. It may cloud the title. I think it probably does cloud the title, and it may result in a quiet title action, but it's not forged. It doesn't contain a material misstatement or a false claim, and it's not otherwise patently invalid.
What you just skipped over was the word groundless. It could be groundless.
It could be, you're right. You're right. The other argument on the quitclaim deeds is that that matter was not brought properly before the district court and the trial court. The trial court judge in the findings, conclusions, said that the parties proceeded to hearing based upon the allegations set forth in the amended petition. The original petition only referenced the stock certificate. An amended petition referenced the two quitclaim deeds. In the response to the petition that my client filed through previous counsel, and it's not called an answer, it's called a response. It was filed August 16, 2012. My client raised the procedural issue that no show cause order, as is contemplated by the spurious lien statutes, no show cause order was issued. The trial court knew that. That was a defense that was put forth in the response to the amended petition. And, you know, my client, of course, was compelled to put forth every defense and all the facts to battle every argument. And so they did put forth something regarding that, but it certainly was not waived, and my client did not agree or consent to proceeding in that fashion. The only other comments, and I'm looking at my time frame here, the legal issue on the priority jurisdiction claim is that the trial court said that the parties and the claims in the prior proceeding and the current proceeding had to be absolutely identical in order for the priority jurisdiction argument and doctrine to apply. That really doesn't make sense. In this case, the quiet title claims between the same parties were pending in the prior case. Two courts, the court in that case, in the quiet title case, and then there was another case involving the annexation or attempted annexation by Minturn, the town of Minturn, of this parcel. Two courts, including the Supreme Court, both said to the Eagle County District Court that the quiet title action had to be finished first before proceeding. So the priority jurisdiction argument, I think, is a strong argument for why the case should not have proceeded at all. And there shouldn't have been a trial, and the order should not have been entered. I will save 2.5 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Martin, on behalf of the appellee Battle North, registration number 14204. Both the spurious document statute, CRS 3835-204 and Rule 105.1 provide relief for, and quote here, any person whose real or personal property is affected by a recorded lien or document that the person believes is a spurious lien or document, and that person may petition the district court in the county or city and county in which the lien or document was recorded or filed for an order to show cause as to why the lien or document should not be declared invalid. And as the court pointed out earlier, a spurious document is defined as any document, and this is 3835-2013, as any document that is forged, groundless, contains a material misstatement or false claim, or is otherwise patently invalid. And as the trial court determined, all three of these documents upon which Sensible relied to support its claim of ownership of property of Battle North were spurious. All three of these documents, the stock certificate, the 2006 quitclaim deed, and the 2008 quitclaim deed were relied upon. They affect Battle North's property. And the argument that, well, a quitclaim deed could never be a spurious document, I think, is not borne out by the facts of this case. Clearly, throughout the course of these proceedings, both in the quiet title action and in the spurious document action, Sensible relied upon those quitclaim deeds to support its claim of ownership of the subject property.
Counsel, as I recall, you filed the 1915 stock certificate and the quitclaim deeds as exhibits in this case. Did you thereby violate the statute?
Right. I'm not asserting any claim or saying that they
affected. Did you violate the statute? Seems to be your argument.
No.
The filing of these documents in a court action violates the statute, and you did that.
Yeah, but if it was only to affect property that was my client's property.
Well, that's an issue of standing, perhaps, but seems to me under your argument you violated the statute.
Well, if I'm not asserting any claim of ownership through those documents, whereas Sensible was. In fact, my argument is precisely to the contrary, that these documents, I mean, if that were the case, anytime you filed a spurious lien action, you'd be in violation of the statute because by necessity, I think you'd have to submit the spurious documents as part of the filing. Clearly, they'd be exhibits in the case. So I don't believe that's the purpose behind the statute.
Well, doesn't that point out the problem? Because in any quiet title action, you necessarily will file the documents on which every party is claiming title. Okay, under your interpretation of the statute, the mere filing of those documents in the court action itself, as opposed to real property records or any other statewide records, constitutes a violation of the statute.
That is only.
So we could always have satellite litigation. As soon as your opponent in the quiet title action files the document they're relying on, boom, I'm going to have a spurious lien case on the side.
Well, I think we have to look at how closely connected these documents are, particularly in this case, to documents that were actually recorded to support a claim of ownership. And it is undisputed in this case that the stock certificate was put forth as authorization by Mr. Tucker to act on behalf of Pine Martin. Mr. Tucker relied upon that stock certificate for authority to do something that he didn't have authority to do.
Well, that sounds to me like it's just evidence in support of his position. But you're saying that you can violate the spurious lien statute by presenting evidence in a civil case that you claim supports your position.
If it's spurious and if it affects property and affects title to property, I think that's right.
Okay, how did your own expert said that the filing of the stock certificate did not affect the title to your property?
And that's because he was asked that question in isolation. He said, this document, the stock certificate, that didn't affect title to the property. He wasn't asked the proper question. The proper question would have been, if you take this stock certificate in context, which is the authorization that was relied upon to file the two 2006 and 2008 quitclaim deeds, if he had been asked that question, do those documents, all three of those documents considered together, are those spurious? Do those affect title to the property? And clearly, you would have answered yes.
Well, I'm not so sure he would have. But let's move on. Let's say that what's the difference between the 1915 stock certificate and a complaint in a quiet title action or an answer in a quiet title action? I mean, under your reasoning, all of those things can affect property because ultimately that party is claiming some interest through those documents or whatever allegations are contained therein, and therefore they're spurious documents?
I think the difference would be that in this instance, the stock certificate is the basis for the filing of the quitclaim deeds. A complaint or an answer is simply a pleading. It's not a basis for anything. And here, the document has to be the basis for some claim or interest in the property.
What if the complaint is verified?
Same issue.
It's then an affidavit through which one is, it's sworn, it's evidence then. We have to regard it as an affidavit. So that would be a spurious document?
I think that the analysis is probably better. I mean, it would probably be a groundless document if there were no basis for it, but the analysis, without anything else, I don't think that simply filing a complaint or an answer would get you there as a spurious document, because it's not a basis for anything. It might be best analyzed under Rule 11 it's groundless and baseless there.
How about this example? Somebody gives me a contract to sell me a piece of real estate. I don't file it in the real property records, but I'm claiming an interest in the real estate. There's a quiet title action instituted, and so I say, well, my interest is based on this contract. Here's the contract. Your position is that's a spurious document.
If it fell within the spurious document as something that was forged, yeah, clearly.
Mr. Martin, if I may interrupt, please. Do you see a difference between a document that's submitted in a court case, which requires a judge, or perhaps in other circumstances a jury, to make a decision about it before it has any effect, to be different from a document that is directly injected into the chain of title, i.e. by being filed and registered with the clerk and recorder's office, which from the second it's in the title, it has the effect?
Oh, no, I see a difference there, but the question I think I was asked, let's just say, for example, I do see a difference there, but let's say, for example, you came in and said that and forged a stock certificate purporting to act on behalf of me or my corporation. You then come in and file a quiet title action claiming to own, and let's say you forge a deed also and claim to own all of my property. I certainly believe under those circumstances, even if the deed was not recorded, that both the deed and the contract would affect my property, and that I would be entitled thus to file certain spurious lien claims or spurious document claims based upon those. So I do think, I acknowledge that there's a difference between something that's recorded, obviously, something that's recorded in the records, the clerk and recorder records, and a document that's filed in a court. But at least in this instance, I don't think we need to get there because clearly the 2006-2008 quitclaim deeds were recorded. And the problem is, from Sensible's perspective, is the reason that they're groundless, frivolous, is they purport to grant, or Mr. Tucker, on behalf of Pine Martin, asserts authority that he doesn't have. He's not authorized to do anything on behalf of Pine Martin. And that's where we run into the problem.
Do you have any cases, Mr. Martin, that state that a quitclaim deed, regardless of how it's filed or where it's filed, can affect title to property?
I don't.
Your opponent says it just can't as a matter of law because it only conveys what you've got.
Well, if that were the case, then we shouldn't be here because that's the entire basis for their claims. It can't possibly be the case that, as a matter of law, a quitclaim deed could never be a spurious document.
I didn't see in the pleadings or the materials that I reviewed any indication that Sensible sought to pursue that theory, that you can't, as a matter of law, have a cloud or a problem with title just by virtue of a quitclaim deed.
Well, I thought that's what I heard in the oral argument today.
But I didn't see that in the pleadings in the trial court.
No. I don't believe it. Oh, no, that was definitely argued in the trial court. That was definitely argued in the trial court that quitclaim deeds could never be spurious documents because you're only conveying what you have authority to convey. And the trial court dealt with that by saying, you had no authority to convey anything, and these weren't what they purported to be. That they were spurious documents because they purported to be legitimate quitclaim deeds from Pine Martin to Sensible.
So it was the lack of authority that the court relied upon?
The court, the lack, maybe I'm not a mis, maybe I'm not getting the question here.
The lack of authority by Mr. Tucker? Mr. Tucker had no authority?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
And that the documents were not what they purported to be, which was what the court said were legitimate quitclaim deeds. In any event, with respect to the priority of jurisdiction and the violation of the remand, both the statute and case law are pretty clear that Rule 105.1 and 3825.204 provide for an expedited statutory proceeding to determine if a document that affects property is spurious. And something is spurious is not synonymous with invalidity. As the court stated in Rossi versus Osage Highland, a document spurious only if its proponent can offer no rational legal or factual support for its validity. And that was what the trial court found with respect to the stock certificate as well as the two quitclaim deeds. And those substantive findings of the trial court were not appealed. So as the court said in Rossi, a spurious document requires more than a showing of invalidity, and thus it differs from a quiet title action in that respect. And secondly, in the quiet title action, there was no claim. The only quiet title claim that was asserted in it should be called a foreclosure action because that's what it was. The lender was seeking to foreclose on the property, and Sensible asserted a quiet title counterclaim. But my client, Battle North, had no quiet or no claim to title in that case. In fact, Sensible pointed out in the Court of Appeals, and which was rejected in the previous appeal that we argued a couple of years ago, that my client had no standing to dispute the or to contest the quiet title counterclaim because it had not asserted a claim to title on the property. In any event, in this instance, Sensible was informed early on that if you believe that this priority of jurisdiction or that the remand is violated, you know, file a motion to consolidate this case with the foreclosure case or file a motion to stay. Neither was done. And as Sensible's counsel stated in closing arguments on November 28th, it specifically decided to proceed with this spurious document action in order to obtain a swift resolution on the merits. And thus, any error that Sensible may claim the trial court committed in proceeding at this point would certainly be fall under the heading of a invited error, which would not serve the basis for reversal under the court's decision in Hansen versus State Farm, 957 Pacific 2nd, 1380 at 1385. And unless the court has any questions, I see my time is up.
Thank you.
I just want to make a few final comments about the priority jurisdiction argument and the two mandates from the higher courts. In the response to the petition and in the trial brief, the issue of priority jurisdiction and the two mandates to stay the other proceedings and have the title resolved in the quiet title action, that was raised in the response and it was raised in my client's trial brief shortly before the hearing occurred. Much has been made of this issue of whether the case should have been stayed or consolidated. My client set forth the defense that, you know, for whatever reason, the procedural decision was made not to try to consolidate and not to try to stay this action pending the quiet title action, but the defense was clearly put forth. My last comments are that the trial court here, in the order being appealed, said a couple of things that I think are difficult. On page 7, the court said that the claim to quiet title remains for resolution in the other case, the foreclosure case or the quiet title case, 98 CV 374, and then it says the case at bar does not operate to fully adjudicate ownership of the property in the manner described in Rule 105, the quiet title action. Well, if the two quitclaim deeds are deemed stricken from the record, there's probably still a Liz pendens on that other case, but those are the documents that placed title into Sensible's name. And I don't really understand, and maybe counsel who was there at the trial knows more than I do, but it just doesn't make sense to say that this action doesn't resolve the quiet title issues. I think it probably does. And it's the classic case of why the prior action, which was the quiet title action, was the correct forum for resolving the issues of who owns it, were the quitclaim deeds valid. And to make those decisions in this case, which was an expedited case, that's not the way that a spurious lien case should work.
Well, counsel, if counsel, your opposing counsel had filed the spurious lien case in the existing quiet title action.
And that would have been one of the claims in that case,
right,
which was mandated to be resolved first.
But I think Rule 105.1 is clear that in that instance, the expedited procedures would have applied to that claim, and so it would have been decided precisely the same way and precisely as quickly and independent of the other claims in the quiet title action.
That may be.
So,
but there was no motion to consolidate.
I know.
On
understand
the part
that.
Of the other
your
party.
Client was invited to do that and declined. I guess what confuses me is if the court in the quiet title action could have proceeded precisely as the court did in this case, deciding the spurious lien or spurious document claim independently and quickly, what's the difference?
Well, there might have been more discovery in that case, even though the procedure would have been as contemplated by the spurious lien case. There was no discovery in the quiet title case. That's why there was a prior appeal here. So the cases could have been consolidated. Maybe there would have been more discovery. Maybe there would have been more opportunity for discovery. And maybe the result would have been different.
How were you at all precluded from seeking that discovery in the spurious lien case?
Well, it is as counsel says, it's a more expedited proceeding. I can't say that I recall because I was not the trial. I was not there. I don't know if there were discussions about what discovery should or should not occur. I suspect the counsel was probably pretty cooperative about that. But the decision to do discovery in a spurious lien case concerns a certain number of factors and criteria for counsel and the parties. Doing discovery in a quiet title action is wholly different.
But I guess what I don't understand is why the decision would have been any different in the quiet title action. The spurious lien claim would have been filed. It would have proceeded on an expedited basis as contemplated by Rule 105.1. And if your client wanted discovery, I suppose they could have requested it just as they could have requested it in this case. But I just can't see anything that would have been different vis-a-vis resolution of this particular claim.
Had the other side or the judge decided to consolidate, we wouldn't be here today. But I think it was an error for the judge to proceed in this case. For the district court to proceed in this case without ordering a consolidation and with that other case pending, which two courts had said that the Eagle County District Court was required to quiet title first before they did anything else.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course. That completes our docket for the afternoon. Court will be in recess. The bailiff may so announce.